And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 3rd, 2021. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to talking about the intersection of environmental justice and transportation called Transportation Justice. So tune in. I'm doing well.
Good, good. So, Mariah, a couple days ago, President Biden signed a whole bunch of executive orders related to climate that was sweeping. It did lots and lots and lots of good things. I think at the time you and I were talking about it, we observed that President Biden had bitten off a lot, and there were lots of constituencies in his that would come into play in these sweeping executive orders, and that we would be probably looking to sort out differences among vision among the different groups in the Green New Deal movement. And I think I spied one. It's not actually an issue yet, but it's an interesting philosophical question to start to cut our teeth on as to how we resolve some of these issues. So can I tell you a little story? Let me give you a little background, and then we can go. Okay.
Yeah, I love your stories. Please do.
Okay. So the overarching story of the climate movement right now, I think, is to say that we have to have a clean energy transition, the Green New Deal, that has to be both fast, swift, and get us to high proportions of clean energy by 2030, but at the same time, it has to be a just transition, that there's a balance between being fast and being just and having all the communities that are affected by climate change brought along in a fair and respectful way. Okay, so you got that. That's kind of the backdrop. There are two things that popped up this week that I found interesting, and as I thought about them, they seem to come into I think the big word is juxtaposition, right? We can Google it, find out what that means. I think it means comparing two kinds of ideas. Anyway, here are the two ideas. One is from our friend Dave Roberts, who's got his own Substack newsletter now you can sign up to, right? He put out a discussion about this brilliant idea that is forming up on the horizon that solves the solution of having a smart grid. So we've talked again endlessly. We've talked about having wind turbines in North Dakota cranking away, making electricity, and a need for electricity in Chicago, 1,000 miles away, right? How do you get the electricity from North Dakota to Chicago? Well, of course, you say, well, let's build some high power lines. Well, fine. Not so easy to do because there's lots of private property you would have to traverse in order to put up new power lines. The idea that Roberts proposes is that these power lines, particular kind of technology that he's endorsing, but it doesn't really matter. The idea was that the power lines would be put onto existing right-of-ways of railroad trains, right? Railroad tracks, and there's, say, 50, 100 feet on either side of every railroad track that's in the right-of-way for the tracks. You could build there and lay in these high voltage lines underground because of the technology. It's all wonderful. And you would have a way to rapidly construct a smart grid infrastructure to transport power all around the country. Because the railway system goes all over the country now, right? So that makes sense. You still with me?
Yeah, right. Oh. And then it goes a lot faster because you don't have to deal with all of the sort of the red tape and the approvals and the permitting. It's all there.
Right, right. So it's an easy thing to jump and say, yeah, okay, the government, the state governments, the federal governments own lots and lots of rights of way. In particular, the state and federal, the federal government owns the right of way to every piece of the interstate highway system, right? And that is like a direct route back and forth across the country's two major cities, between major cities, land owned by the federal government. Why could we not imagine putting renewable energy technology or transmission lines or something on the interstate highway system, right? And I think there are proposals. In fact, I know here in Massachusetts, if you go out on the Mass Pike, in some of the big loops, I think in the Route 27 exit, right, there are solar panels erected inside the cloverleaf of the Route 9, Route 27 exit off the Mass Pike, right? Land's just sitting there. Why not put a solar panel on it, right? I mean, I personally have often ranted and raved to myself as to why can't we have a bullet train that goes from Boston to Miami along, you know, on pillars in the middle of I-95, right? All the way down through Connecticut, through New York City, right down to Washington, D.C. I mean, you already own the right-of-way, right? So, okay, so there's one idea. Put this on the wall and say, yeah, there's lots and lots of federal property where the rights of way already exist, and you could put lots of renewable energy technology or other kinds of things on that land. Second idea that floats around is one that I saw in the Hip Hop Caucus, which is the 100% show, which discusses sustainability and clean energy from an environmental justice perspective. And their headline, they're recently doing a series of articles about transportation justice. And they talk about mobility justice and transportation justice. And there's lots of subtext there that we don't have time to go into. But that the headline that caught my eye was that every highway is a monument to racism. And when you start to think about it, many of the highways, particularly in the big cities, were built on the backs of the most oppressed communities. The least advantaged communities got the highway, right? And generally speaking, now there are exceptions everywhere, but generally speaking, the places in the 1950s and 1960s that got the highways were the people who couldn't fight back very much. And I think there are examples of Robert Moses, who, while he may have been a brilliant visionary, had some issues, we should say, in terms of where he put highways and whose neighborhoods got knocked down to build the various highways in New York, right?
Yeah. And just to put a little bit of a point on, not Robert Moses, but when you have a highway running through your backyard, there's all of the particulates, all of the, you know, cars, all of that is polluting the air that you're breathing regularly. So the homes that are closest to the highways are the communities that are closest to the highways are the ones that end up having the highest rates of asthma and, you know, lung related sicknesses.
Absolutely. For me, there is no, from what I know, there's no direct example of a big collision of using federal rights of way that would impose on environmental justice community. I don't, there might be. And I think there are probably people out there much smarter than I, maybe not as smart as you, but much smarter than I, who are thinking about this stuff and are way ahead of the curve, right? But but the light kind of one, I said, look, there is this issue. I mean, if, you take Boston, where the Route 93 and I-95, Route 93 go up through Dorchester, through, into the city. If you were at some time in the future to put a bullet train in the middle of that, right, on his way down to Miami, would that be fair, right? Probably not. And the question is, how do you take advantage of sort of these rights of way to get a fast transition while at the same time having a respectful and thoughtful and a just transition with some of the communities that might be hurt by it, right?
Yeah, it's really important. And I mean, I think that there's I don't know if a stepwise is the way to put it, but it's certainly just leaving the cars as non-electric vehicles, polluting the air, going through, you know, on that highway, leaving the situation as is, that's not a good solution, right? You still have all of the health-related problems. Having electric vehicles on those roads, okay, maybe that's a little bit better. Does putting a bullet train on there, is that better because now there's a lot less pollution that's polluting those communities? Or is it still really, I mean, it's really not quite, it's not still not the right solution because you still have this loud, dangerous train barreling through these communities. you know, is the gains from reducing the amount of pollution that people are being exposed to, do those outweigh the drawbacks of having the train? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, for my money, the way out, or so I guess we're not proposing any solutions here. In fact, this is something I've just kind of stumbled on, right? But it seems as if the Biden, particularly Vice President Harris's plan of having what you might call an environmental justice impact statement is a place to begin, right?
Whatever you do,
you have to have that respectful listening conversation to figure out how does this affect the community? What do they need, right?
Right. And I think, guys, to my point is reducing harm. Sure, it's better, but the best would be to get rid of the harm altogether, right?
Right. So one thing is that our Senator Ed Markey, you know, bless his name, and Representative Cori Bush, newly elected from Missouri, someplace in the Midwest, St. Louis, have gotten together with a proposed bill to mandate collection of environmental justice data, right? Which is a good thing, right? Because you can't make any decisions until you collect that data. So that's a good thing that I hope would be a tool to help our society figure out how to balance this fast and just thing. And the other thing that I saw was that in one of the packages of the COVID relief or whatever's floating around in the Senate nowadays, there's something like $10 billion allocated for literally removing highways from urban centers that are destructive to the communities.
Wow.
Right? And with huge implications, right? I mean, what do? You take out the highway, then where are you, right? You got to have some replacement. But at least there's money there to begin to contemplate the removal of highways. And it's not that crazy an idea to just take out some of these highways, because the classic example is the Big Dig here in Boston, fraught with time and money and whatnot. But it changed the nature of neighborhoods by making an eyesore go away, right?
Yeah, and just to rewind back to the mapping, the environmental justice mapping and data collection that Markey and Cori Bush are doing. That project is interesting to me. I think what it sounds like is that they're going to use that map and then find which communities are experiencing the most inequality when it comes to environmental justice. So they're going to use it to find, you know, sort of overlapping areas where several things are compounded. And I think that's an important and novel and not done nearly enough way to find out, you know, all of the ways communities are getting impacted, and sometimes in ways that build upon each other.
I think an example of that would be the Cancer Alley place down in Louisiana, right? You got poverty, probably food deserts with the chemical plants everywhere, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's overlapping bad things happening.
Right.
Well, I tell you what, as I say, this is not a proposed solution. As I say, I'm sure there are people who have thought much more about this question than we have, right? And so as we learn more, we'll talk about it. But I think you mentioned it before. It's wonderful to be able to have a discussion about something constructive, right? A real problem that we need to resolve in order to get ourselves to the kind of society we want to be by having a clean, just transition.
I'm happy we're not talking about whether climate change is real or not, right? We're talking about, okay, now what do we do about it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we'll put up links to some of the stuff that we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you if we missed something or misstated something, or if you know of some place where this issue is a real live wire, or if you know the solutions that are useful, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. podcast@massclimateaction.net. We'd love to hear from you. You can listen to this show on your smartphone using Stitcher and all the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support that keeps us thinking outside the box, I hope. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.